Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 150 for June 22nd, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
It's extremely labor intensive. And if anybody ever complains to me about the price of whiskey again, I'm going to give them an earful because it's worth every penny. It's just amazing how much work it is.
That's Lawrence Graham of the Malt Maniacs. After his week at the Springbank Distillery Whiskey School in Campbellton, and since it's a special episode, we'll have a double feature with a somewhat sadder story to tell. The Speyside Whiskey Museum in Dufton may be forced to close its doors next spring. The details later. First, though, let's look at the news. I've mentioned special releases from William Grant & Sons in the last couple of episodes, and there's still another one to report on this week. Glenfiddich is releasing the fifth edition of its rare collection 40-year-old single malt, but this one is even more special than the previous four. It's being released in honor of Michael Jackson, who passed away last summer. Michael had written the official tasting notes for the first four editions. JustDrinks.com reports maltmaster David Stewart took five casks of 40-year-old malt and added in what was left of the previous 40-year-old vatting. That one had malts distilled more than 80 years ago. There are just 600 bottles available. They're all numbered and at a suggested price of £1,000 or about $2,000 each. William Grant & Sons plans to donate the proceeds from bottle number one to the Parkinson's Disease Society. Earlier this month, we heard from Andrew Durbidge about the Australian Malt Whiskey Nosing Championship. The competition was held Saturday night in Sydney, and the winner is now two-time champion Craig Daniels of the Malt Maniacs, who just happened to be at Andrew's house when I called Sunday morning Sydney time.
The competition was wonderful. It was a difficult affair. The whiskies that were chosen were all very similar in profile, but the gentleman who we had in charge of it to choose the whiskies was particularly devilish about it and picked a number that, were, as I say, had all very similar in their flavour profile. There were six of the ones on the table from Speyside. There were no easy picks, in fact. There was nothing from Isla, nothing at cast strength. They were all 40%, so you had to have a pretty sharp palate to pick some of them apart. At the end of the first round, we had seven people who actually tied, so we had to have a taste-off, and that separated all the scores, so we had a clean winner at first place, a second place and third place. But all those people that made that taste-off picked four out of eight, so it was very difficult. The winner picked four out of eight and then went on to the taste-off, and that was Craig himself. And the person who came second was David LeCornier, who was responsible for setting up the competition in the first place in the early days and is a previous winner. So certainly the two gentlemen that have had a bit of success at this in the past succeeded again.
And a lot of fun was had by all, right?
Absolutely. No, it was wonderful. Lovely venue, perfect setting. The master chef, Gordon Ramsay, was actually at the venue at the time. I'd like to say he was there for our event, but sadly he was dining downstairs at a separate thing. But it was a lot of fun. And a lot of people walked out the door with smiling faces and certainly saying we should do this again.
So. Oh, good. Glad to hear it. So I understand you have the winner there with you.
The winner is here, Mr. Daniels himself. I shall transfer the phone here and you can have a chat with him. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Craig. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, how hard was it to tell those Speysides apart? Because I know you only got four out of eight the first crack.
Extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. But I got Craig and Moore and Old Pulteney mixed up. And then I got lost amongst the Glenlivets and the Tamdus and things like that. So it was quite hard.
How did the taste-off go?
That was actually a bit easier, funnily enough, because one of the whiskies that was in the first round was in the taste-off as well, which meant that, and it was the only whiskey out of the first ones that you would have bet money you'd got it right. And that was the Bushmills, and it was the only Irish on the table, so it was fairly easy to find. And the second one was the Glenmorangie, the original, which is one that I've got fairly intimate acquaintance with over a long period of time, so I found that fairly easy, but I didn't get the third one right. The third one was a Tamdhu, but I thought it was a Glenlivet. So all in all, very testing it was.
How many of these have you won now? I think it's, what, three?
I've won two.
Two, okay.
A long time between drinks. The first one I won in 1995.
Now, the first prize is a trip down to Tasmania to Lark Distillery for their whiskey school. Have you been down there before?
Yes, I know the Lark family very well, actually. I'm really excited about it because I've got this sort of... I've got an interest in the technical side of whiskey as well as the sort of consumption side of it. So I want to go and learn how to be a distiller, so that'd be good fun.
Craig is also one of the organizers of the Australian Malt Whiskey Convention, which is held every 2 years. The next one will be in August of 2009. Tickets are now on sale for Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest San Francisco on October 10th. And if you're a McAllen lover, you're not going to believe what John Hansel has cooked up. John broke the news in his blog this past week. McAllen master distiller Bob Delgarno, his predecessors Frank Newlands and Sandy Curl, and former managing director Willie Phillips are each going into the McAllen warehouses, and they will each create a single unique bottle of the McAllen that will never be recreated. Instead of auctioning off each bottle as is, Whiskey Fest attendees will be able to buy a dram with all the proceeds going to charity. There's a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Back in episode 125 in December, we heard from Keith Wood, the owner of the Ark Whiskey Bar in Munich. He's hosting a whiskey tasting led by malt maniac Peter Krause on June 28th. The Templeton Rye Golf Classic Charity Tournament is July 11th in Iowa City, Iowa. Highland Park brand ambassador Martin Duraz teaches a single malt and cheese pairing class at the Astor Center in New York City, also on the 11th. And the Classic Malts Cruise starts up in Oban on July 12th. The Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival has announced its dates, the weekends of September 18th to the 20th and September 25th through the 27th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com. If you're looking for the ideal buddy trip and you're tired of golf vacations, a distillery school might be the answer. Fellow malt maniac Lawrence Graham just got back from one of those buddy trips to the Springbank Distillery Whiskey School in Campbellton.
Actually, I didn't pick it. My friend Nigel, he decided to go first. And then he started talking about it, and he said, and I thought, well, that sounds like a great idea. So I asked if I could go along, and he said yes. And he picked it because Springbank does everything from malting to bottling on site. And it's the only distillery that does that. So we got to see everything and participate in everything, which was, it was very, very informative.
And I would imagine there was some hard work involved.
Well, I'll tell you, those casks are so heavy, and rolling them around and shoveling barley and laying the malt floor and moving the barley into the kiln for drying. And, it's extremely labor intensive. And if anybody ever complains to me about the price of whiskey again, I'm going to give them an earful because it's worth every penny. It's just amazing how much work it is.
Give me a sense of how the week goes once you get there.
Well, they get you there at 8 o'clock on Monday morning, which is an ominous start, an 8 o'clock start. And you go into Stuart's office. He's the manager, and they give you, you have to sign a bit of paperwork and whatnot, and they give you an overview. And then Frank McCarty, distillery director, took us around the distillery and gave us a health and safety briefing and, you know, fire exits and this and that. And then we went back to Stuart's office, and we then went up and started malting, turning over the malt floor right away. That was our first task on Monday.
And it's not as easy as it looks in the pictures, is it?
It's not as easy as it looks in the pictures. And of course, you know, with great practice, you can, when you turn the malt floor, grab the malt floor, you can get your lines nice and straight. But, you know, ours look like snakes going across.
It's not like shoveling snow, is it?
It's not like shoveling snow, and it's heavy and it's wet. And, but, you know, it's very interesting. It's good fun. And everybody was very keen that we were enjoying ourselves and that we were learning. Everybody there wanted to make sure that we were learning. So, and we did. We learned an awful lot.
What did you learn about the process that you didn't know before?
Just, you know, a thousand little things, you know, from banging in a bun to, you know, again, that looks a lot easier than we actually do it, because you've got to hit the bun properly or you'll split it. To we filled 70 casks of Hazelburn, and, you know, sometimes the casks, they'd been empty for a while and there'd be little leaks. And so little tricks of simply using a hammer to pound on the wood and close up the leak, that worked. Sometimes the leaks were, we filled some Spanish casks, and they were, a lot of them were leaking, and we had to transfer two or three to the contents to new casks and hand pump out. So there is just, you know, things like that, that over to the mash tun, the conversion from to extract the sugar happens the moment they add the water. And, you know, it's just many, many little things.
And I would imagine there's a fair amount of sampling involved at some point.
Well, there wasn't too much because, you know, we were working there's no drinking on the job. But we did have a tasting with Frank McCarty on Thursday night, which, you know, we went through the Springbank lineup. And so that was nice. And I got to try a sample of Kilcarran from Glengyle, which was interesting. It was 4 years old, and it was, you can see taste the quality of the spirit, and it, you know, it was young, but it was a nice whiskey. It's going to be very nice at 8 or 10 years old.
And that's not even officially been released yet, so you got a sneak preview, basically.
That's right. In Cadenhead's whiskey shop, in the back room, they have a room called the tasting room, and they have three small barrels that are work on the Solera system, one's Springbank, one's Long Row, and one's Kilcarran. So they top it up every once in a while, and so I got to try that, and I actually brought a bottle back home, so I've got a bottle, so that's neat.
And what's the diploma look like?
The diploma, it's black on tan. It's Springbank. Oh, I'm going from memory, which is always a dodgy business.
No, I was referring to the liquid diploma you came home with.
The liquid diploma. Oh, apologies. they gave us a Springbank bottle with our name on the label. So it was bottled for Lawrence Graham and then bottled for Nigel Drever. So basically a one-of with that label. And, yeah, that was really neat. It's 57% alcohol, no age statement. But both Frank and Stuart said, you know, this is a really, really nice Springbank and very unusual. So I tried to get Nigel to open his on Friday night, but he wasn't having any of it.
And he tried to get you to open yours, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
was it worth it?
It was absolutely worth it. We, you know, I don't think of myself as a, you know, a mini distiller or anything, but I learned so much, and it was a very, very positive experience. The B&B we stayed in, which they set you up with, is just, you know, 3 minutes down the road from the distillery. They give you a voucher for lunch down at Cadenhead's, and you can go down and get lunch and come back to the staff room and have lunch with the staff. And, you know, it was just a great, great experience. And we went around Glengyle. They took us on a tour of Glen Scotia. So, you know, it was great.
What's the best story you heard during the entire week? Because I imagine you heard some.
Oh, you know, there's lots of little stories and lots of little laughs, but I think I'll let that. If people want to hear the Springbank stories, they're going to have to go to Springbank.
This week is the final session of the Springbank School for the summer, but the classes start up again the week of September 15th and last through October. There's a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. From Campbellton to Speyside now, the old saying goes that Rome was built on seven hills and Dufftown was built on seven stills. There's one museum in Dufftown chronicling the town's whiskey heritage, at least for now. That's because the Speyside Whiskey Museum faces eviction from its premises next March, just as the tourist season is beginning. Glo Ramone is one of the museum's longtime volunteers.
Well, it's a small little whiskey museum in the heart of the whiskey country. We started it in the late 90s, did a lot of work on it, and we're renting it. We have a 10-year tenancy agreement, and it's peppercorn rent, which is just a sort of a nominal rent we pay every year, but our tenancy agreement runs out in March, and it's not being renewed, unfortunately. So we've built up a nice little collection of whiskey memorabilia and pictures and articles used in distilling and what have you. And it's a very busy little museum in the summer. And we hold our nosing and tasting evenings in there. And we have two festivals a year, and we have all the talks and tastings going on in there and various events.
What's been the reaction to the loss of the facility?
Well, a very sad. I don't think people, well, I don't think some of the local people have realized yet what impact it's going to have on our little village. Because it's mainly used as for the tourists. You know, it's mainly tourists that come through and visitors who come to the nosings and tastings during the summer. So it's going to be a very sad loss if we can't find alternative premises.
And the loss of the premises really comes at a really bad time for Dufftown next year, right?
It certainly does, because, as I say, next year is extended Spirit of Speyside Festival, because it's going to be a 10-day event, and it's the year of the homecoming, so we're expecting a lot of overseas visitors from America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you name it, all the far-flung corners of the world, and as well as people from England, cheer, coming up. England and Wales, you know, and possibly Ireland coming across. So, yes, it's going to be, hard, because we're still going to go ahead with the festival, but we're going to have to try and find alternative premises to hold our events.
Is there anything available that you could move into temporarily, at least?
Not really. There's not really anything that we've pursued most avenues at the moment. We could go slightly out of the town in one of the distillery warehouses, but then it's not going to be very convenient for people getting there, and also it's not going to bring people into the town for keeping our little village, little sort of alive. For the shops and you know, all the other sort of facilities that sort of spin off, eating places and shops.
Why did the landlord decide not to renew your lease?
Well, it's a bit complicated because the landlord was who made the agreement was an elderly gentleman, and who has since died, and his family have inherited, and they don't want to renew the tenancy agreement.
Anybody we can put some pressure on?
Well, the owner of it now is Mrs. Gwen Robertson, and I don't know whether you could put pressure on her. It would be fantastic if you could, and that she would extend it. We did ask for a 7 month extension to tide us over the festival, and that was turned down. So,
are they willing to renew at a higher rent, or is just the rent the problem, or they want to use it for something else?
They haven't told us that. They haven't given us any reason. But our peppercorn rent is like 99 pence, you know, a pound a year. But they haven't said that, you know, they haven't said whether they would, you know, renew it if we paid a higher rent. They haven't given us that information.
Now, I saw in the Northern Scott article that there's a possibility a couple of years down the road to move into a public school, correct?
Well, it's the library. It's actually not a public school. It's the library, which is its own premises on the main street. And at the moment, there's the premises that we would like to obtain houses the library and the council office, both of which are going to, the council office is going to close there, and the library is supposed to be moving into the school. So, yes, we are hoping that's not going to happen till maybe 1 or 2 years. So, in the meantime, you know, if you close a museum, you lose the momentum. And, you know, people sort of say, oh, it's closed, and then you have to start building all up again. Well, we've built it all up again, and it was, you know, that's the sad thing, is having to close it down and start all over.
This must be a really sad occasion for you and the other volunteers, because I know how much work you've put into building this up over the years.
It is. It's really, you know, I mean, say, there's just a few of us, and we've all worked very hard. And spent, you know, quite a bit of money on the premises to keep it, you know, we put in a kitchen, we put in toilet facilities so that we could use it for the nosings and tastings and for the visitors. And we've all put a lot of manpower in, and a lot of sweat and love has gone into it. So, yes, it's very sad to have to close the doors. And then, you know, and then maybe in a couple of years' time, start building it up again. And it'll be a great loss because with small villages now, the small villages are dying. And our little group was formed, Dufton 2000 Limited was formed to promote tourism and keep our village alive. So, yes, it will be, a big loss.
Have the owners indicated any interest in maybe selling the property?
We have asked, and they said no. So,
interesting. It seems like a foundation or someone could come in and buy it and arrange for the long-term survival of the museum, possibly.
Yes. We would be willing to do that, but they haven't, you know, they haven't given us any reason why they won't. We don't know what they're going to use the property for. It still needs a lot of work doing to it, but, you know, if we were the owners of it, we would probably get grants, and we'd be prepared to put in the work and bring it up to standard, a higher standard. But because they haven't given us any reason and they've said no, well, we're a bit stuck.
How did the museum come to be in the first place?
Well, because we are in Dufftown, we are the heart of the whiskey industry. We have distilleries all around us, and we just thought it would be something. I mean, a lot of people have sort of said, oh, would you like memorabilia? And there's a lot of, you know, artifacts that we could get our hands on. We thought it would be appropriate to have it, a whiskey museum, in the heart of the whiskey country. And so the idea was formed, and we, you know, looked for premises, and this premises was offered to us, and we went ahead.
And you have everything from old illicit stills that I know Her Majesty's Customs and Excise have donated to all sorts of stuff, right?
Yes, we do. We have a lot of artifacts that come from the coopering side of it, of the barrel making, of the measuring and the hydrometers. And all sorts of, you know, weights and measures, customs and excise, locks and various, I mean, and numerous lovely pictures that people have donated that go back into the sort of, you know, the last century. So, yes, it's an interesting, small but interesting. And we were hoping to expand it to also have some of the local history. We have, you know, quite a lot of local history with George Mount Stephen, who went out and helped build the Canadian Pacific Railway, and donated money for the hospital here. We have Maurice Walsh, who was a writer, who wrote about this area. And we have a beautiful old church, one of the oldest churches in Scotland. And, there's a lot of local history that we were hoping to incorporate into the museum. But as I say, we would have liked to expand, but we have to wait now and see what happens.
In the interests of fairness, I have contacted the lawyers for the landlord and offered a chance to tell that side of the story. As I'm recording this episode, I have not received that response yet, but that offer still stands, and I hope to have their side on a future episode. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. And you'll find links, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly, and thanks for listening.